Nama Om Sampradaya Krishna Stagana Tilam Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tilam Namaste Saraswati Devi Guru Vani Pujarane Sancha Samyavari Prasthati Deja Tana. Which first number is up there? Is it 60? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
Matari Shvena Sarvatma
Matari Shvena Sarvatma
Balena Mahasojasa
Balena Mahasojasa
Avishayataya Devo
Avishayataya Devo
Bhagavan Bhuttara Diva
Bhagavan Bhuttara Diva
Matari Sva,
Matari Sva,
the air,
the air.
Iva,
Iva,
like,
like.
Sarvatma,
Sarvatma,
all pervading,
all pervading.
So here, Srila Sukadeva Goswami is describing qualities of Prithu Maharaj as he was ruling. And this quality we just heard, he was all pervading. Like the air. Now, what does that mean? Raise your hand. He's all pervading like the air. Does that mean he's everywhere? That he's the king? What does it mean?
He was famous.
Perhaps.
His influence is spread all around.
Yeah. Yes. It's not the one I was thinking of, but okay. But yes, it's true. Both. Yes.
I see what you're saying.
Okay, but I was thinking of his, not exactly his influence, but like he knew everything that was going on in his kingdom, like the air is everywhere. He knew what was going on everywhere. This, even Krishna did this, and it's also described that Lord Ramachandra did this. He used the system of spies. Spies. Yep. He knew everything that was going on in the kingdom because the king has to know what's going on in his kingdom. He has to know, not in a nasty, terrible way, but he has to know what the citizens are thinking. And this is so incredible when Krishna's pastimes are described in the 10th canto, when Narada Muni goes to the house, the each of the different palaces of Krishna. This is in the 69th chapter of the 10th canto. Narada Muni visits each of the 16,108 palaces of Krishna, and one of them, he was looking to see that Krishna was separated. There were 16,108 Krishnas, and each had a palace, and it was yet the same Krishna, but yet they were all individuals. They were all separate individuals, yet the same Krishna. And actually, why Narada Muni was there was because he had heard that Krishna married 16,108 wives. And so that's conceivable. You could put all the wives and all the ladies into one room, and they could perform a ceremony, and the person could be there. And then the person, the priest officiating at the ceremony, could say, "Now you're married to all these." So that was conceivable. But what Narada Muni heard was that Krishna married them not only at the same time, all of them, but in different places. So you can also conceive of how someone can marry. So it would take some time to marry 16,108 and eight wives in different places, one after the next, but it wouldn't be at the same time. So Narada Muni, when he heard that Krishna had married 16,108 wives at the same time in different places, he wanted to see this. That is quite inconceivable, yeah, at the same time in different places. So Narada Muni wanted to see Krishna exhibit his unlimited opulence in this way and his unlimited abilities to do things that are inconceivable, because this is achintya shakti, which means that Krishna has inconceivable power. And without accepting as inconceivable power is inherent within the Supreme Lord, there's no meaning to be the Supreme Lord, the unlimitedly powerful. It has to have that ability to be inconceivably powerful, achintya shakti, to do inconceivable things, things that are inconceivable to our finite, small brains. So Narada Muni wanted to see it. So he went and he saw from one palace to the next, to the next, to the next. He saw that in each palace, Krishna was there and doing different things. Sometimes he was making strategies, and sometimes he was eating, sometimes he was playing with his children, sometimes he was doing this, sometimes he was doing that, and sometimes he was dressing up in disguise and wandering around the kingdom to find out what was going on and to find out what people were really thinking. Now, Narada Muni was so amazed by this, because Krishna is all-pervading, and he is the super soul and all live in everyone's heart, and he's already savagya, he knows everything. Isura Sabhabhutanam. What's the rest of the verse? With this saying? He's in everyone's heart and he knows everything, and yet, as a pastime, he was dressing up in disguise and wandering around the kingdom and asking people how they were doing and is everything going okay and what do you think of this King Krishna who has so many palaces? What do you think about him? And not only would he know what's going on, he would adjust. If the people were dissatisfied about a certain thing, he would adjust it. So, here it's describing that he is all-pervading like the air. And what we're hearing now are the qualities of Krishna. And interestingly, the qualities of Prithumaraj, who is empowered by Krishna to rule the kingdom. He has Krishna's potency within him, Avesha. He's called an Avesha avatar. He has Krishna's potency within him to rule, to give an example that other rulers can follow as how to rule the kingdom in an effective way. Now, what does it mean in an effective way? The first thing that Prithumaraj did when he became the king was what? Does anyone know? Raise your hand. Yes.
Leaven the earth to make vegetation grow and feed the people.
Yes, he made sure the people were well fed, they had food. Because if people don't have enough to eat, what will they be thinking about all the time? Well, what do you think about on Janmashtami all the time? You lie down to take 10 minutes rest, and what do you dream about? So, the first responsibility of a ruler is to make sure that people have enough to eat, and then after that is to make sure that everyone is engaged in some activity. Because if there is no activity for people, meaningful activity, then their minds will give them so much trouble. And all this, the arrangements in the kingdom, they are all made so that people the people can be materially satisfied to facilitate their spiritual advancement. So that was really most important for the king. So many arrangements had to be made so that people would use their lives in such a way they would take advantage of a human birth. So there were so many principles, you would call these in philosophy presuppositions. There are so many principles that were understood. And based on those understood principles that no one questioned, the king had his activities. So what were the unquestioned principles, the presuppositions? One of them was that we are eternal, we are souls. And that life has a purpose beyond the eating and the family affairs and the occupational duties and maintaining oneself. Life has a transcendental spiritual purpose. Yet those other things have to be done. The eating, the sleeping, the family. But yet, they should be done in such a way, and the king ensured this, they should be done in such a way that they elevated someone rather than degraded someone. So he was like, the king was like a father, the queen was like a mother. And they saw the citizens as their praja, as their children, and they wanted the best for the citizens. And they had knowledge, because sometimes you may want the best for someone, but you don't have knowledge, even though you may be sincere. Like one time I was, when I go to the airport, Aniruddha Prabhu, he would kindly drive me to the airport, and he's an expert driver. So he wasn't present. So one devotee arranged someone else to drive me to the airport. So I asked him, is he a good driver? And he said, he's very sincere. And I became afraid. Just imagine you have to have an operation. And the brain surgeon's qualification is that he's sincere. So Prithu Maharaj not only was a sincere king, he had sincerity, and he wanted the best for his citizens, but also he knew what was best for his citizens. He was expert, he was empowered by Krishna with all these qualities. And he knew, based on knowledge, that we are souls. This was a presupposition that underlined the entire culture. Everyone knew they were eternal, and yet, according to their fate, according to their karma, they're placed in a particular situation, in a particular birth, and how to do that, act in that birth properly, so that their consciousness would be elevated. That's what people were thinking, and that's not an easy thing, as we all know, to act in such a way that's a mixture of practical, to get the practical needs of life met, and at the same time to spiritually advance. Life in the material world, especially in Kali Yuga, does not make that easy. Clearly it does not make that easy. And perhaps we shall discuss this point a bit later. So let us just continue. So he was all-pervading, like the air. Matarishra, Eva, Savatma. Then Balena.
Balena.
By his bodily strength.
By the
king had to be powerful. That no one would dare challenge him. Prabhupada used to tell of the king of Kashmir 50 years ago, he would say, and that was 1970, so that means 100 years ago. The king in Kashmir was so strong and so powerful and so strict that if the law was that if you saw something, even if it was very valuable, lying in the street that someone had dropped, no one would touch it. You were not allowed to touch it, even if your intention was, I'm touching it to give it back to the person who lost it, because everyone will say that when they're picking it up and putting it in their pocket. So even if that was your intention, you could not touch it. And there was, and in those days, Prabhupada explained that you could, if you dropped something or lost something in the street, then you could come back in 2 hours or 2 days and it would still be there. Which is very different from another story that Prabhupada told, is that this is a way of thievery and trickery and chalu behavior, that he said that this was something that he must have observed in Calcutta at some point, that there were people would say, they would walk around in a crowd and say, I lost my diamond ring. Did you see my diamond ring? I dropped it over here. Did you see my diamond ring? And people said, no, I didn't see it. And then that person would be looking everywhere for his diamond ring. And then someone would walk over to with him and say, I have this diamond ring for sale. I'll give it to you very cheaply. It was only a piece of glass. They'd be working together. Very clever, yes. So, very different system, very different style, very different behaviors. So Prabhupada attributed that very moral, honest behavior in Kashmir to the strength of the king. So Balena, he was very strong. And Mahasa Ojasa, by courage and power. So he was a real chatri. Not only was he powerful, but he was courageous. Not only was he strong, he was powerful, but courageous. He was challenged. And we see this in Maharaj Prickett in the 16th or 17th chapter of the first canto, when he confronted, when someone was, this Kali was beating a bull, and he confronted him. He pulled out his sword and he said, you dare do this in my kingdom? No one can do this in my kingdom, to give trouble to an innocent creature for no reason. Giving trouble to an innocent creature, what to speak of a bull who is Dharma? You cannot do this in my kingdom, and who is ready to kill him. So this is courage to confront. There's, if you've ever gone to the in Jaipur, there's a museum of the kings of Jaipur, the previous kings of Jaipur, and they have some of their artifacts. They have the weapons and things like that, all kinds of weapons. And also one of the kings that they have his, one of his jackets. And it was huge. And he was like 7 foot tall and huge and so powerful. So if he tells you to stop doing something and he has his sword out and he's 7 foot tall and he's huge and powerful, you know that you have to stop. Avishyataya. By intolerance. Devaha. The demigod. Bhagavan. The most powerful. Bhutarativa. Like Rudra. Sadashiva. So So here is the translation, and in this we shall hear how he was intolerant. So in one sense, he was very tolerant. In another sense, he was intolerant. So which is it better to be, tolerant or intolerant? Okay, well, very confusing vote here. All those who think it's better to be tolerant than intolerant, raise your hand. All those who think it's better to be intolerant rather than tolerant, raise your hand. All those who don't want to commit themselves in public, because you know I'm going to trick you to some degree, probably. So, obviously, in some circumstances, it's very good to be tolerant. Like if someone is bothering you, we are told to be tolerant. Why? Why is that connected to chanting the holy names? What verse of the Sukhastakam? Srinada Pisanitseya. As tolerant as a tree. And in that mood, Kirtaniya Sadahari. So there's such a connection by being tolerant, of being tolerant and being able to chant. Now what is that connection? Raise your hand if you'd like to give us this wonderful connection.
When we're chanting, we're trying to please Krishna. If we become intolerant, we can't do that nicely.
Yes. Yes. Anyone like to say any more? Yes?
It requires humility.
Yes, but more. Get very, very direct.
Just don't get disturbed while chanting.
Yeah. Or when you're not chanting, because you know what it's like, or at least I know what it's like, that if your mind is disturbed, then what do you think about when you sit down to chant Hare Krishna on your beads? Can you hear the holy names? At least I can't if my mind is disturbed. And in Kali Yuga, one of the great qualities of Kali Yuga, it is built into Kali Yuga is to disturb you. There's unlimited things, places, objects, circumstances, and dare I say, people who irritate you and disturb you. And if we don't learn to be tolerant, then we'll never be able to chant Krishna's name with a peaceful mind, and then we will. Then we won't get the benefit so easily of chanting. Perhaps I'm the only one who has that problem. So, in his bodily strength, this is the verse, and after I read it, I'm going to ask you to repeat it, and then after that I may even ask you if you remember anything. In bodily strength, and in the strength of his senses, Maharaj Prithu was as strong as the wind, which can go anywhere and everywhere. As far as his intolerance was concerned, he was just like all-powerful Rudra, like the all-powerful Rudra expansion of Lord Shiva or Sarasiva. Please repeat. In his bodily strength, and in the strength of his senses, Maharaj Prithu was as strong as the wind, which can go anywhere and everywhere. As far as his intolerance was concerned, he was just like all powerful Rudra. It was just like the all-powerful Rudra expansion of Lord Shiva. Or Sadashiva. So there's a time to be tolerant. When something is disturbing me, I should be tolerant. But there's a time to be intolerant also. Like if someone is disturbing, giving trouble and causing some of, for example, the young children, our children in the community, we don't say, Mahaprabhu said we should be tolerant as a tree and let and that the children be disturbed. No, it's our duty to protect them. We must be very intolerant of something like that. So when to be tolerant and when to be intolerant, when to act, when to be to not act, when to raise our hand, when to be quiet, when should we speak, when should we not speak. These kind of discriminations take intelligence, take even wisdom, when to apply what principle to apply to each and every occasion. This takes wisdom. There's gyan, which means knowledge, and then there's vigyan, which can be translated as science, or it can be translated as wisdom. So wisdom is the to know what principle to apply in a particular circumstance. So it's applied knowledge to life and reality. Now, which is it easier to be? Is it to be easier filled with knowledge, or is it easier to be filled with wisdom? Raise your hand if you know this answer to this obvious question, or the obvious answer to this question. Raise your hand if you... Thank you. Which is easier?
It's easy to know, difficult to apply.
Yes. Okay, maybe I'll be tricky in this one. That's what I was thinking, actually. But then when you said it, I thought I should be tricky. It's hard to know, and it's also even harder to be wise. But that's what I was thinking, to tell you the truth. It's difficult to be wise because life is so complicated. It's so much easier if everything is just black and white. You know, it's either this or it's this. But when we have to live our life, it's so much more complicated than that. There's 2 points on this side, there's 3 points on that side, there's 5 points on that side. So one has to be wise, or not has to be wise, but it's being wise is not easy. I mean, not that I would know, but being wise is you have to think of this point, and then you have to think of this point, and you have to think of this point and this point, and then worst of all, you have to make a decision. How am I going to proceed? Because if it's just black and white, then it's easy. I just go one way or the other, and then gain everything. But wisdom means that you have to understand that if you go left, you lose the benefit of going right. And if you go right, you lose the benefit of going left. So sometimes you can just stand in the middle of the road for like hours and hours and hours trying to figure out, should I go left or right? Which is dangerous if a car is coming. And sometimes we have to make decisions. And there's not enough time to just wait until we figure everything out. So then what do we do? This is not on the topic of the class exactly, but what do you do when you have to make a difficult decision and you're not really sure what to do? What do you do? Raise your hand if you can help me with this. Yes, thank you.
Take guidance.
But what happens if you're in the middle of the road and a car is coming and you decide to call your best friend up who's always not let you down? Yeah, that's a good general principle, but sometimes we can't do that. Well, sometimes even worse than that, people give us guidance, we ask someone for guidance, and then we don't like their answer. And Prabhupada in this room, he actually said in front of Radha Vallabha, he said that you should not ask a sadhu a question if you're not going to accept his answer. He said that in this room. He said, don't waste his time. Okay, any more? That was a good answer. Very good and important answer, though. Thank you. What do you do? Because decisions are very complicated in life. Yeah, what do you think?
Me?
Were you raising your hand? Or?
Yeah. Well, listen to your inner guide.
Listen to your inner guide. The problem, yeah, you should listen to your inner guide if you have the right... If your inner radio is tuned to his frequency, that's perfect. But what happens if one voice says one thing and another voice says another thing and things like that? Flip a coin.
Can I just add something to that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, to me, Nigad is very much about your sense of knowing, and it's beyond your thought. That's what I mean by Nigad.
Yeah, I know that, but my point is, if you're in contact, the inner guide means the super soul, basically, mm-hmm. Krishna within your heart. Mm-hmm. So if you're in such direct contact with him, and he's, what's your name?
Maxim.
Mm-hmm. And if you hear Maxim, now it is time to go to the Hare Krishna temple. So, okay. But sometimes, when the mind is disturbed and things like that, it's not so easy to contact. So I'm making a complicated question out of this, and all the answers have been good. But I'm doing that for a particular reason, and the particular reason is because this is the circumstance we usually find ourselves in. So, anyone, one last suggestion? Yes.
So, in a situation where you don't know what to do, you
chant
Hare Krishna.
That's good too, actually. Safe answer too. In this group, yes. Last, okay.
I pray.
Yeah. But what happens if you have to act? Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you my conclusion on this anyway. Is you use... Oh, I can't resist. Yes, please. Yeah, that's actually very practical. You park the car, don't you? You don't know whether to go left or right. So you park the car. You don't even need an inner guide when he's here. What is your name again? Huh? Hari Dave. Okay, Hari Dave. You have a mobile phone number? I'll tell you what I was thinking. I was thinking you use all the things that everyone suggested. And sometimes you're still not really sure what to do, but you have to act, so you pray to Krishna, you make your decision, either based on your intelligence or intuition, whatever you're gonna do, you're not 100% sure, you make your decision and then pray to Krishna and say, I want to serve you, Krishna. And this is the best I can do under the circumstances and make this decision. But I'm not attached to the decision particularly. What I'm attached to is pleasing you. So if you want to adjust my decision, if you think it's not the best decision, if you want to make an adjustment, please, I beg you to do so. But this is what I'm going to do based on what I understand. That's how I try to deal with those things. But I also do it how Hari Dave said when I'm driving a car. So, he was just like all-powerful Rudra, an expansion of Lord Shiva. And that's in his intolerance, because Lord Shiva can get extremely angry. So there's times for anger too. There's times for anger when the devotees are being given trouble. One should also become angry at that. This is the words of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Narottama Das Thakur. When people are envious of the good people, then it's legitimate to become angry at them. And it's also legitimate to become greedy sometimes. And the kind of greed that Srila Narottama Das Thakur mentions won't entangle us in the material world. That kind of greed is tatra loyam api mula mekalam, that how will I learn to love Krishna? I've spent so many births, so many years in this life, and have no love of Krishna. I'm greedy for so many other things. I have so many other desires, but I don't really desire to love Krishna. That desire is not burning in my heart. How unfortunate I am. May I one day develop that type of greed? Tatra loyam api mula mekalam. And Sri Ramananda Roy has explained that type of greed, that strong desire, is the price, is the cost of actually developing love for Krishna. Because love for Krishna, it's not developed just by our endeavor. We need to endeavor. We must endeavor, because there is no exhibition of our desire unless we endeavor. And in Sanskrit, the word is parisramam, and this comes up in that means work, parisramam. This comes up in Damodar Lila very strongly. When Mother Yashoda Maya was, she was, Krishna was inside. He was just a little boy. Hare Deva, how are you? Oh, no, not how are you. How are you? Are you fine? And how old are you? 6. So he was much younger than Hare Deva. Even. Stand up so we can see a 6-year-old. So is a 3-year-old half the size of a 6-year-old? What do you think? Because he's thinking half the size in numerical figures. Very intelligent. Okay, sit there. So Krishna was just, he was so young, maybe a little older than, and he was inside sleeping, and his mother was, we all know the past tense, churning butter, and even though she was the queen of Vrindavan, she would churn the butter herself because all her servants were busy, and sometimes she just, out of love, she just wanted to do this herself, so she would do it in exactly the way that would please Krishna. So her whole mood, and it's said that she would get, there's a special kind of cow called the Padma Gandha that had the fragrance of do pen tops taste good? Curiously. Just wonder. And so she would take Padmagandha cows that were so fragrant and they gave the best milk, and she would feed them the softest, most fragrant and tasty grass, and then with that milk, she would take that milk and then she would turn that milk into what? Butter. And yogurt. Yogurt and butter. So she was churning, and as she was churning, because there was natural love that she had for Krishna, for the Supreme Lord, and she wasn't thinking of him as the Supreme Lord, she was thinking of him as her son, her love was so great, but he was still the unlimited Supreme Lord. Because of her love for Krishna, she was singing about him and thinking about him, and thinking, I'm doing this for my son, and thinking about my beautiful son. And he's so attractive, he's so wonderful, and he's singing about all the things that he does. And then he wakes up, because he was sleeping inside, and he starts. And what does a young child do when he wakes up? Yes. How do you know? Because you saw your brother. Yeah, I thought so. And what does he want when he wakes up and cries? What does he cry for? He already knew. He didn't have to tell me. His mother. So his mother was outside, she heard him crying, her mind immediately went to him, and then he came out crying and held on to her and pulled on her sari as she was turning, telling her that she should stop the turning and turn to him and feed him her milk, breast milk. So immediately she was so hurt, because the mother's breast milk is her affection for the child. It's the liquid form of her affection for the child. And that is so nourishing on the physical level, on the emotional level, on every level. It's liquid affection. And therefore, she was feeding him and so much. And then suddenly, what did she see that was very nearby, so nearby that she could see it? She saw that a milk pot was boiling over. And that milk was meant for Krishna's pleasure. So, and this is an interesting point, things that are meant for Krishna's pleasure are so important, they have to be taken care of so carefully. So she actually put Krishna down just for a moment, practically, she's thinking. And I will go, and of course the milk is boiling over, and I want to stop it before it really boils over. So she put Krishna down and said, I'll be back in just one moment. And she went to do that. And Krishna doesn't like to be told to wait. Even if it's for one moment. Now, one reason, and none of you young boys or young girls or older boys and older girls, ladies, should imitate this quality of Krishna, because we're also told that we have to learn to be patient. But Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when he wants something, he wants it, and he wants it now. Now, this is, because Krishna is Param Satyam, the Absolute Truth, this is always a wonderful quality when he has it. Because, for instance, what would happen, just imagine how it would be if somehow we acted in such a way, well, what he wanted now is to give us some mercy and bring us to his lotus feet. Now, that we wouldn't really think is very perfect. Yes, he can do that. But at this time, just for the exchange of love between him and his mother, he was very angry that his mother put him down. So what did he do? We all know he went in, well, maybe not all of us, but most of us know. He went and he took a rock and broke the pot of butter. And he was crying. Why was he crying? Do you know? Why was he crying? Do you know? Yes. Do you know, or you're just going to guess? Okay. Who knows why he was crying? It's actually a difficult question. Yes.
Because his mother put him down.
Yes, yes. That's an easy answer to a difficult question. But the mentality, we all know, is when someone does something to us that we don't like, we cry and blame the other person. Even if we did something to make that person act in that way. We tend to always blame the other person. Do you do that sometimes? It's always the other person's fault? Do you do that sometimes?
Sometimes.
Sometimes, okay. Well, I also do it sometimes. And probably more than I would like to admit. So in any case, Krishna was crying because, after all, his mother had told him to wait for one moment as she turned off the milk. He's a very restless young boy. So he broke the milk pot, and then he ran away, and he was feeding butter to the monkeys. And Mother Yasoda came out, and she saw him, and Krishna was looking around everywhere, looking around. And this is so amazing, because again, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but his mother's love for him, her love as a mother loves a son, made him act just like a little boy, practically speaking. And his nature of savagya and his omnisciency. What does omniscient mean? Yes. He's all, what does omniscient mean? What does omniscient mean? Yeah. I asked one devotee, an adult devotee, what do you remember from yesterday's class? And he said, omniscient means all knowing. So, this is the secret of Vrindavan, of Braja, that the love of the residents of Vrindavan is so complete, that and so powerful, that it makes even the Supreme Personality of Godhead act only in relationship to their love. So he acts. So Krishna acts as a friend, as a young boy, as a lover, and because this gives him to have this relationship, the exchange of love that is so selfless, that just loves him for because they love him. It is so appealing to Krishna, and therefore he's called Bhakta Vatsalya. He'll do anything for those devotees. So in any case, Krishna, who knows everything, who is all powerful, he's looking around in fear that Mother Yasoda, because he knows he's done something wrong. And Mother Yasoda sees how clever her boy is. He's done this, and she goes to him very, very, very slowly to catch him, because what is she thinking? She's thinking, my boy is so restless that if I don't train him, if I don't teach him right from wrong, who knows what he'll do when he grows up. So half my duty is to teach him. So she wanted to chastise Krishna. So she picked up a stick, and when Krishna saw the stick, of course he was never going to hit him with the stick, but he saw the stick, and he went running away, and she went running after him. And Krishna was very young and fast, and Mother Yasoda was elderly and not so fast. I said, you come back here. No, you're going to beat me. No, you come back here. And finally, she caught him. And she said, you did this, you did that, you broke the pot, you were feeding to the monkeys. And he's crying and crying and crying, because it's all your fault. You put me down when I was hungry. And she said, your friends are all monkeys, and you're like a monkey. You're doing things like a monkey. And Krishna said, if I'm like a monkey, I'm going into the forest and I'll never come back again. And Mother Yasoda thought, oh, I shouldn't really frighten him too much. So she put down the stick, and then she thought how to punish him in a way that he will learn his lesson. And it was all based on her loving affection for him. So she decided to tie him up, and she pulled the rope in her hair. And Krishna's waist was at this time this wide only this wide. And she took the rope that was tying her hair, and she couldn't get it around his waist, because Krishna is unlimited. How can you circumscribe, go around something that's unlimited? This is Krishna's achintya shakti, his inconceivable power. He's unlimited. So she thought, this is, and it was, as we know, this, that's...
Two fingers.
Yes, two fingers destroyed. So she got more ropes, and got more ropes, and got more ropes, and more ropes, and more ropes, and no matter how many, how she tied the ropes together and tried to bind Krishna around his waist, and amazingly, inconceivably, it was always two things were, two things amazed her. One was his waist was only this wide, and still no matter how much ropes, couldn't go around him. And also, the other thing, the second thing, was that it was always the same amount too short. Two fingers too short. And Mother Yasoda was thinking, I don't care if it takes the entire day and night. I'm going to find out, I'm going to bind my son. She was so determined. And the ladies in the villages went over to her and said, oh, Mother Yasoda, it doesn't seem to be the desire of Bhagawan that you tie him, that he be punished. So we know that he's naughty, but I think it's better that, no, I'm going to teach him something. So when Krishna saw his mother's hard work, his intense desire, her intense desire to serve him in this way, because everything in Braja and everything in devotional service is really service. No matter what it appears from the outside, everyone's mood is I want, this is how I love Krishna. This is how I express my love for Krishna. So when Krishna saw that she was working so hard and her determination to serve him and to love him was so strong, then naturally what was evoked, so that was called her bhakti-nishtha, her fixedness in bhakti was so strong, and her desire, her greed, her intensity of her desire to please him was so strong, then that naturally evoked his kripa shakti, his mercy, his potencies of mercy. And that allowed him to be bound. That caused, allowed the unlimited to be bound. And in fact, that's the point that we are making. That it takes that endeavor, and our great teachers, the great acharyas, have commented extensively on this. It is not that our determination and our hard work can evoke, can bring forward Krishna's mercy, because again, he can do anything at any time. And we said that he was intolerant, so that means he could do whatever he wants, something done now. So it's not, so he can immediately give us so much mercy, unlimited mercy, immediately. It's not that we can do anything from our side that can force him to do that. But his mercy is evoked when he sees our strength of desire to love and serve and please him. So how to get that desire is really the question that devotees ask themselves. How can I develop an intensity of desire to love Krishna? That means, how can I increase my sincerity? Because in life, I go through life, and it's such a difficult balancing act in life. We have to do so many things. So many things are important to us in life. So how to balance these things so at least we move forward in developing our desire to serve Krishna and love Krishna? How to balance our life in such a way, in a practical way, that we don't neglect the most important thing, because what I've seen in life is everything else seems to want 100% of time. Everything seems to demand 100% of time, of time in your life. Everything is so demanding, especially in Kali Yuga, in this difficult age. So how to live our life in such a way that the most important thing not only doesn't get neglected, but it orders the rest of our life. Because there's so many responsibilities we have. We have the family responsibilities, we have the financial responsibilities, we have our health responsibilities, we have this responsibility, we have that responsibility. So how to keep the proper balance in our life so that we're actually always, if we're always moving forward in our increase of desire to love Krishna. This is the art of living, actually. One way to do it is in order. So first I'll take care of this part of my life, then I'll take care of this part of my life. First I'll get the finances together, and then the family together, and then I'll get this and this, then I'll do that and that. And then, when everything else is done, then I will take my spiritual life very seriously, I promise. But the problem with that way is that we never get around to it, because we never will get around to it. Or we relegate it. We relegate it. This percent for spiritual life, and then this for this and this and that. But then we find, as I have found, that one day we wake up and we find ourselves quite elderly. And then when we find ourselves elderly and this part hurts and that part hurts and this part hurts and this part hurts, and then it's so demanding. Just even to keep the body moving becomes so demanding. So one, of course, we can't talk about this point, what to do individually, but I will say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very merciful in Kali Yuga, and he gave the kirtan of the holy names, the sankirtan of the holy names, that somehow or another, whatever fate our life, our karma has given us, we should chant Hare Krishna, we should, and Radha Balava have come, Gornatai have come, Jagannath Baladev Subhajadevi have come, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, they've come here so that we can come and look at them every single day and take a picture, and not as much with our mobile phones, but with our mind, and remember them during the day. Because part of the art of this is of living in this way where Krishna is actually the center. Part of the art of this is remembering the beauty of Krishna. Mother Yashoda didn't have to think, now I should remember the beauty of Krishna, because she was on the platform and she spontaneously, continuously, always remembered the beauty of Krishna while she was doing her work of churning the butter. She was remembering Krishna, because that is the nature of love. So what do we do who don't yet have love? So we look at the deities humbly and say, please stay in my mind. We chant, we hear about Krishna and his pastimes from the Bhagavatam. We associate with devotees. We live in a holy place. We visit a holy place. We turn the place we live into a holy place. We cultivate goodness. Try to avoid passion and a especially try to avoid ignorance. And this, even this, in one sense, simple thing, which isn't directly Krishna conscious even, the mode of goodness in Kali Yuga, it's so difficult because the society, the whole world around us is going in exactly the opposite direction from goodness. And it follows us in our pocket in the form of the mobile phone too. Everywhere we go. You know, it fills us. There's so many things we have to do all the time, and we're continuously being bombarded with information, with things that make us fearful, the things that wake up desires in our minds, with the anxieties of life. So it's very difficult to even cultivate goodness in Kali Yuga, to be peaceful. The symptom of goodness is peacefulness, and from Sanjaya Te Gyan, knowledge comes from that. When the mind is peaceful, naturally one gets knowledge. I know I didn't tell enough stories in this class because all the boys are playing with each other instead of listening. Except Hayagriva, who's taking notes on his hand. I think it's maybe drawing funny pictures instead of actually taking notes. Yeah? Is it true? How many points did you write down from this class?
Eighteen.
How many did you write yesterday?
41.
41. I think you tuned out early. But yeah, it's quite a challenge how to balance one's life in Kali Yuga and how to live in such a way that we don't miss the opportunity that Krishna is giving to us, because so many alternatives will clearly be presented to us. And life tends to crowd us. So, but Mahaprabhu was given the kirtan of the holy names, especially the sankirtan, because chanting Krishna's names, it places us congregationally, especially in front of the deities, it places us, it allows us to touch the transcendental world according to our capacity, that there's such a taste from that that's not available in the material world. The heart can be touched, such a sweetness. It gives us, it is the life that we are longing for. Ananda Bhuji Vardhanam. It reminds us that yes, there's so much more to life that I have. And I want that. So the more that we can remember Krishna, the more that we can chant, the more we can do these items of devotion. So it's the more we can touch transcendence with our consciousness and service, etc., the more fortunate we are, and the more that desire will increase. So this is the great challenge of life, how to organize one's life, how to organize my life, so that I use it to its greatest fulfillment of moving forward in my quest for the great jewel, most valuable jewel of love for Krishna. And Prabhupada, we wanted that. He came and sat right there. Brought a Balava here and put the deities here, Kodatai, just so that we'd have an opportunity to see them, to serve them, to pray to them. To get the real benefit of human life. Okay. I shall end here. And I didn't speak about almost anything that I had planned to speak about. Had this wonderful plan. The plan was to tell you all about how Pritamrad got to this point. Because now we're nearing the end of the pastime of Pritamrad in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. And the instructions that he gave and the instructions he got are so powerful, so important. And then these qualities that he's exhibiting really make sense when you read his pastimes. And then in the beginning of the next chapter, he just says, "Now I'm getting older. I'm finished with this. This very important duty that Krishna has given me. I've done my duty. Now, he says, I want to just hear and chant about Krishna. I want to become absorbed in that. This kind of bhakti that we're talking about, these wonderful qualities that he has, it's called Sangha Siddha Bhakti, which means that in the association of bhakti, these are helpful, very helpful, they're bhakti. And then there's Arupa Siddha Bhakti, which means that you take something that has nothing to do with bhakti, like having a job, and you impose bhakti on it by you have a job and you give some of your hard-earned money to Krishna. So you're imposing on bhakti, on something that has no bhakti inherently in it. And then there is sort of Siddha Bhakti, which is the real powerful forms of bhakti, like hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the deities, doing direct service. So he was saying basically, at a certain point of his life, I want to focus on this kind of bhakti. So he retired from his kingly position, and he went to the forest and performed austerities and chanted and heard about Krishna. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes?
Would you, does it really affect mind differently? The action which is the intolerant action, does it really affect mind differently when it is for defending someone or for one's own self?
It depends on the mind. In other words, if the point is that you put Krishna in the center. So one will bring you closer to Krishna because he's actually the engine driving the intolerance. This is not pleasing to Krishna. He wants me to act. So that will have a really different result, and it will elevate you even. If I'm the center, whatever one does with me being the center, it entangles us. But whatever we do with Krishna actually in the center in an authorized way will purify us. Do you have any experience of that in your life? Doing something you ordinarily wouldn't do, but actually for Krishna? The theoretical answer based on the philosophy, but there's lots of practical experience. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
You were mentioning at the beginning that Maharaj Pritha was not only sincere, but he also knew his duty as a king.
He had knowledge of what to do, yes.
Yes, so practical. And then you were giving example of a surgeon, because sincerity is not enough, you also have to practice knowledge. So, does it also apply to chanting Hare Krishna, or is sincerely an offenseless chanting is sufficient to achieve Krishna prayer?
Sincere and offenseless chanting. Is that enough? That brings us to the point of liberation. No, offenseless chanting brings one to the point of liberation. None of us. But then chanting on that platform, and especially by hearing, when you also hear about Krishna and associate with Krishna, then. But because Krishna has names, if you have nothing else but the holy names, and you're praying to Krishna, and you're taking full shelter of Krishna, and you already have love for Krishna, then of course it will develop. But naturally, if you are chanting Krishna's names, then you'll hear about Krishna too. It's natural. You want some content to your thought about Krishna to be there. It's natural. If you love somebody, you naturally want to know about that person. It's natural. Is that okay?
Yesterday's class, you had mentioned that you might be sharing what the Bhagavatam is trying to do in the Dhammarja section.
Yes.
Could you say a little bit something about that?
I did. Right at the very end. The progression. It goes from first, in the first part, when Preetam Raja talks about irreligion. First, the Preetam Raja is glorified, and the answer was, no, don't glorify me when I'm born. After I perform the activities, then glorify me. So here, in this section, he's already performed his activities, and the glories are being spoken. But then he performs a sacrifice. I'll do it very briefly. And then irreligion is produced. So we see the difference between irreligion and true religion. And then Preetam Raja instructs his sacrifices performed, or I can't remember the exact order, but he instructs his citizens on how to perform their duties, their karma, their work in such a way that they become elevated in bhakti. And then the Lord instructs him, I'm not getting the order right, he gives them a benediction as a result of a sacrifice he performs. And that benediction is basically that, and it's very interesting, is when you think of a benediction, what kind of a benediction is valuable, he gives them the benediction that he will perform his duties properly, but also that he will associate with the four Kumaras. And the four Kumaras instruct him on how to perform bhakti. So before it was described how karma leads to bhakti, and now it's described how jnana, knowledge, is within bhakti. And the basic point, the bhakti point, is this hearing and chanting about Krishna. And serving. That's the basic processes. And then he performs his duty. He goes through his life in one sense, and he performs his duties, as we're hearing, using these great qualities that he's been benedicted with. He performs his duties, but even then, at the very end of his life, he says, enough. I just want to focus on hearing and chanting. These are the real powers that drive our bhakti. They make our devotion grows like water makes a creeper or a plant grow. So it's bringing us forward. This part of the Bhagavatam brings us forward, showing us that karma leads to bhakti, jnana leads to bhakti, and the essence of bhakti, of the process of bhakti, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnam, hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, serving, etc. Something like that. Okay, there's one more minute's worth of questions. Yes, Prabhupada. But yes, and then I'm going to ask any of the ladies if they have a question.
How to practice humility in unfavorable or provoking situations? Easy to be.
By continuing. That'll make you humble. You'll find out you're not the center of the universe very quickly. Because after all, we're insignificant. There's billions and billions of billions of living entities. How many humans are there in this world right now? 7 billion. And how many living entities are there? I mean, yeah, so many. Yeah, so many. It's like billions and billions and billions and billions. And here I think I'm the one who's the most important. So you just try to do any service, steadily, every day, and you will become humble. If that becomes your focus, that will make you humble. Okay, any Matajis have any questions? Yes.
Love everyone. I don't feel any difference between people that I feel like they're getting a bestie or enemies or anything like that. But I always think about Krishna can, but I don't feel like I don't have love for Krishna. How do you feel that feeling?
How come that feeling is there? Or how can I develop the love for Krishna?
Because I feel like I always can, I think about Krishna all the time.
But how come you do see a difference? You love everyone, but you don't love him? I think you have an appointment right after class. You go and tell him your problem. He's the perfect person to solve this problem. But you have to tell him very sincerely that I don't have love for what to do. Will you please help me develop love for Krishna? But before you ask him, you have to become determined to accept his answer. Okay. You go right after? Yeah? That sounded like no. Okay. Try your best, okay? Jai.